WISR now presents It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. Dave is off today, so we have a special guest host. It's Your Turn is Butler County's only live call-in talk show. You can join in the conversation by calling 724-283-2525. And now, let's join It's Your Turn and today's special guest host.
And welcome to the program. You are listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM. Tyler Friel, Kayla Moles, and in another day for Dave Malarkey. It's great to have you aboard. On this Wednesday afternoon, we've got a jam-packed show for you. Coming along, we've got Justin Stockdale, as it is, Kayla, guess what it is, National Recycling Day.
It's America Recycles Day. America? Oh, same thing.
It's the same thing, but it's America Recycles Day.
It's an important day.
It really is. So we're going to talk to Justin Stockdale. He's the Western Regional Director for the Pennsylvania Resources Council. We'll chat with him by phone. We'll also chat by phone with Deborah Cassidy. She is of PennDOT, and yes, we are getting to that time of the year where snow will be coming sooner rather than later. So we've got that to deal with.
Yeah. Kelly, there was a big frost this morning.
There was a big frost. I had to break out the ice scraper, which threw off my schedule just a little bit getting in here. So you're going to have to take proper protocol and get ready for that, Kayla. You'll chat with Deborah Cassidy, and we will dive into these winter driving tips.
We have so many. She answers all the questions. They did a paint the plow program. So you'll see some of the plows coming with, you know, designs on them. So she'll explain that. She explains the beet juice. Remember how that was a thing a couple years ago? We talk about that, all kinds of stuff.
So we're going to get into that. We're also going to get into the recycling, but we're going to start off on a fun note as we are coming up to the holidays. So you got to be thinking holiday shopping. We were talking about it yesterday, Black Friday on the way. You're looking to shop for different things. We're trying to get out of the box, and that's what we're going to do just in our own backyard with playthings, etc. They're on Route 8 North William Flynn Highway. It's the Spaceship Store. And with that, we bring in Tim Shingleton. He is of Playthings, etc. Tim, good afternoon. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks. I'm excited to be here.
Well, we're excited to have you on.
I want to know what the cool toys are this year, because it seems like every year there's like a couple it toys, and Tyler and I were talking, and I'm like, we got to get Playthings, etc. on here. I mean, they know what the coolest stuff is. Tim, what's going on this year? What is your inventory shelves looking like?
Well, there's some things that we really like, I should say, that are extremely popular, and then there's some that are popular that we don't like so much, but they're popular anyway. But, so this year, what's been really hot lately are these squishies. They're like these stress-relieving characters and odds and ends, like fruit and stuff. The kids squeeze them, and they go back into shape. Those are super popular, especially amongst girls. There's Aaron's Thinking Putty. Crazy Aaron's Thinking Putty is the name of it. And it's neat. It's kind of like your old-fashioned silly putty. But there's heat-reactant putty, and there's magnetic putty. It'll, like, crawl over a magnet. It's pretty neat. There's UV-reactant heat putty, which is pretty neat stuff. There's, like, a new laser tag set from Laser X, where you get a couple of guns and a couple of receivers that you wear, and you run around your house and play laser tag inside your own home. That's been pretty cool. Lots of new stuff, and stuff like that. The people that that don't know what to get somebody, they have no idea what to get somebody. There's these light switches that we found this year that are like steampunk, like gear shaped light switches. You bolt them onto your wall in your room or your living room or something, and you turn your lights on and off with these crazy contraptions. Those are pretty awesome.
So something you absolutely don't need, but you should probably buy.
We have a lot of things like that. Oh, you know what? There's a new wand. It's a magic wand where you can turn your lights on and off, like your Christmas lights. You hook up your Christmas tree to this little receiver, and you can turn your Christmas tree lights on and off by waving a wand at it. Those are pretty neat. We have new, Christmas ornament decorators where it spins this ornament around and you hold the marker up to it, and you can make it, you know, colorful. There's all kinds of new things here.
Those are a lot different than the Matchbox toy cars that I got as a child.
What happened to, like, holiday Barbie?
Yep. But there's, yeah, things that I think will be popular this year with the new, like, Star Wars movie coming out. I think the Lego Star Wars sets will be extremely popular. I think that movie comes out December 15th.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about a month away. And, like, Lego advent calendars, always super popular. Yeah, there's a lot of things here that people either have never seen before or they haven't seen in, like, 50 years. So, like, you know, old clackers or Lincoln Logs or Erector sets, you can still find all those classic toys here also.
I know all year long you guys get people to stop by just because you're the spaceship store and it's so cool. Do you see that even more so, you know, before the holidays, people just stopping in, seeing what you got and getting a few things?
Absolutely. And some people make a pilgrimage here almost. Like, it seems like every year it's their family's tradition to travel from wherever they are. We've had people travel from as far as, like, Canada to come here.
That's
and it
awesome.
Seems like they come every year, and yeah, I'll see faces in here that I recognize from, you know, Christmases in past years, where I'm like, hey, you guys, you know, you made it back. That's awesome. So, yeah, there's family traditions where they come to the spaceship toy store once a year.
And the spaceship toy store, playthings, et cetera, your family has owned and operated playthings for quite some time, so it's in the family as well, which is what I was going to ask you, you know. The list of toys, the litany of toys you rambled off, sound like nothing that was around just even 15, 20 years ago. How have you seen toys change, and what have been some major advances, even in the past 10 years?
Well, certainly, yeah. Things like drones, you know, we didn't even know what a drone was 10 years ago. And now, you know, over the last 5 years, you know, we have sold hundreds and hundreds and can't keep them in stock. Just technology has improved. Things that toys will do, that's like what's been popular the last couple of years are like robotic toys and toys that will respond to you know, your actions or movements or your voice, and can carry out commands. Like, you can program them to do certain things. But I always I make sure customers are aware of play value. It's a good way of describing how long your kid will actually play with the toy. So sometimes consumers do ask the wrong questions. They ask, you know, like, what does this toy do? And that's really not the right question. It's what does your child do with the toy that really they should be asking. So there are timeless toys like Legos and Lincoln Logs and Erector sets that I mentioned where a kid could play with them for years into the future. And then there's new fancy robots that, you know, sound like they're going to be really, really fun. You know, their kid's going to play with it for a long time, but really they're done playing with it after 10 minutes. So we are very particular about what we do bring into the toy store to make sure that we try to get quality, you know, fun toys that that kids will play with for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like more like almost investment pieces. I like that term, play value. I've never heard that before. One advantage too, Tim, to going to a store like yours instead of, you know, a big box store, you are their resource. And I like that you'll talk to the parents and tell them about play value and make sure that they're really getting, you know, bang for their buck when they're buying all these toys to put under the Christmas tree.
Yep, absolutely. And we do something that's a little bit differently here in our toy store, and that is we encourage people to play with the toys while they're here. So you're allowed to ride around on things and shoot things across the store. And, yeah, it's definitely not a museum. You can pick up things, play with it, touch it, and actually see what it does before you buy it and leave the store with it. So we definitely encourage that here.
And that was one of my favorite things as a student of Slippery Rock University. I was going up Route 8 all the time, and when I would drive by playthings, I'm like, well, what are they playing with today? And I would see drones flying in the air and like five-wheeled bicycles in the parking lot. I mean, you guys do a ton of different things, and I do think that's pretty cool that you allow people to go out and try these things. When people are coming in, what are some common questions that you get asked?
Well, honestly, why the building is shaped like it is.
why is the building shaped like it is?
it's basically just to attract attention. And it
works.
Does a good job of that. It gets people talking. It's something unique in our area. It it definitely represents how unique the items are inside of the toy store. We wanted something to kind of show off and say, hey, this isn't your average place. You know, had we just built a regular old steel building out in the middle of nowhere, I don't know if we'd have the kind of customers that we do today. I think I think word of mouth is our biggest advertisement. I mean, we obviously advertise with WISR, but we
appreciate that.
we definitely appreciate people that say, hey, have you been to that spaceship store? And people don't even know our name, Playthings, et cetera. They just refer to us as the spaceship store, and that is something that we kind of hang our hat on, that, yeah, we built a place that's a little bit different. That's why the building is shaped the way it is. It's just to get people talking.
How long have you guys been around, Tim? How many years?
That's the next question people ask. How long has this place been here? We've been open for 12 years. We opened in October of 2005, so we just had our 12th anniversary, and every year it gets bigger and bigger, and we we find more and more toys to bring into the shop.
Do you guys, with the increase of Amazon, you can buy everything online now, do you ever get worried that, like, standalone stores will have a harder time existing in the future, or is that why you kind of do things differently? You let people come in, be hands-on, let them play with the toys, answer their questions, that sort of thing.
You answered that basically pretty well. So instead of selling just a product, we do kind of sell the experience. We found that a lot of our customers don't know what they want to buy. When you go online to buy something, you pretty much have an idea of the item that you want to buy. But let's say you're buying a gift for somebody and you have no idea what to get them. You can stop in, you know, just for even 15 or 20 minutes and see a bunch of different items that that you might want to purchase for them that you had no idea existed. We just talked about, like, all those things I reeled off that you know, you said, wow, I didn't know some of those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's exactly what we're here to do, and that is to provide an experience instead of just providing someone a sale. So,
you talked about drones. How popular are they? How many different kinds are there? It just seems like there's a large variety when we talk about drones.
Yes, there's definitely a lot to choose from these days. As far as, like, remote control quadcopters or drones, they start anywhere from like $30 or $40, and we have sold some as much as like a couple of $1,000, a $2,000 drone. And yes, it really, price point depends on what it will do and what you'll do with it. So there's some now with object avoidance. There's some that will follow you around, literally like a loyal dog in the air, where it will just follow you and film you doing whatever you're doing. It's pretty amazing the capabilities of some of these drones now. But basically, you can come in and get an awesome drone for, you know, $40 for a kid just to fly around inside your house, or you can get one for your professional business. Or, you know, let's say you're into real estate photography or home inspections, yeah, you can get something that will actually provide a service to your clients for your commercial business. So we sell everywhere from, a little kid's toy up to something that that people use for their livelihoods.
Tim, I remember, I think we talked to you last year around Christmas time, too, or it might have been 2 years ago. I think we were talking about hoverboards. Do you remember that? Was that a popular, I don't even know if you can call that a toy in past years. Is that still a thing?
It is. It definitely has. We have to time the fads out correctly. And I think we timed that one well. Just this past year, like those fidget spinners and fidget cubes were very popular around Easter time. So we have to stock up heavily at the right time. And then you just don't want to be stuck with a lot of those things after the fad is over. So hoverboards, yeah, we don't sell anymore. I still have occasionally one or two people will ask me for a hoverboard, and, yeah, we'll send them somewhere else just because we're We're not stocking them anymore. But, yeah, that was something that was extremely popular for a small period of time before the Christmas season. I think that was either 2015 or 2016 Christmas season. I don't even remember
that must have been 2015. That's funny you mentioned the fidget spinners, too, because I just read a story this morning. Obviously, everybody knows. I mean, I don't even have kids. I knew that was such a popular toy a couple months ago, and it was on a list this morning of the toys not to buy your kids because no one cares anymore. And it's so funny because, like, 2 months ago, people were standing in line for these things.
Yep, you're absolutely right. And, yeah, that's why, you know, we don't want to be stuck with 2,000 fidget spinners still in stock whenever it's not a fad anymore. But, yeah, whenever you ask me what's hot now, you'll notice I did not mention fidget spinners because they are not really hot anymore. Yeah, a lot of those other things are, that, like I said, the squishies, that's something that we didn't quite see coming. And, yeah, right now we have plenty of, and we're guessing right now when that fad might be over.
So you liken them to, like, stress balls. I feel like adults need those more than kids.
Yeah, I never understood that. Yeah.
What are they stressed about?
Junior high kids, well, exactly. What are they stressed about? Their science homework, seriously.
We're talking with Tim Shingleton, Playthings, et cetera. And you talk about, you know, trying to time out these fads so you're not overstocked with one item or understocked with another. Can you look into the future when it comes to toys and guess this is going to be popular, we need to get on this? Or how do you guys, when you look at inventory, decide this is what's popular, this what isn't? You know, what are some of the things that you're looking at?
I'd like to tell you that there's some sort of science behind it, and, you know, we know what we're doing, but really, everybody's guessing. We, luckily, are small enough and nimble enough that we can act on impulses quickly, whereas I think some of the big box stores have trouble filling their shelves as quickly as we can. So when we see a trend start, we can actually grab that item and get it in right away, and we can be nimble, like I said. But as far as being able to look into the future, boy, I wish. that would be a handy tool for anybody. But, yeah, it is fun to see these fads come and go, but I really do. I like the toys that I like, and sometimes we'll bring in something just because we like it. There's this strange fidget toy that we have now that I just chose to bring in because I liked it. you know, it's this ferro fluid. Have you ever heard of it?
I have not.
No.
It's a magnetic fluid in a bottle, and you play around with it, and it's hypnotizing and mesmerizing. We brought in something called a hypno gizmo. That's like a hypnotizing bead maze that when you spin it, the beads fall in different directions. Every once in a while, we'll just have to bring something, you know, just because we like it, not necessarily because it's the next big thing, but, you know, just to show people, hey, there's other things other than what's the most popular right now.
Tim, you might have the best job in the world. I don't know. Are you hiring? Do you mentioned, you know, you're going to have tons of visitors in for the holiday season. We've got a month and a couple weeks to go. Will you restock as you go? You know, you say the drones are hard to keep on the stock or on the shelves. How does that all work?
Yes, actually, we're continually restocking because, you know, we don't know even right now, middle of November, what is going to sell out or what's going to be super popular within the next couple of months. Yeah, we're always getting in new toys and new items, too. So we're constantly working. Right now there's a stack of boxes that we're trying to frantically get out on the shelf. So, yep, that happens every day.
Is there any dangerous toys out there, maybe that you guys don't have in inventory, but you've seen on the market that you would tell parents this may not be a good idea for a child?
Yeah, there's certainly several things that even say right on the package, this is not a toy. And I would even put, like, drones into that category just because we're talking about dealing with, like, recharging a lithium polymer chemistry battery. That's not something that, you know, I'd usually recommend kids to do. So, you know, you would want the adult to be able to recharge a battery or plug stuff in and out of a wall outlet. So Yeah, every once in a while there's a toy that's a bit controversial. Actually, the first thing that popped into my mind were something called Bucky Balls. They're like magnetic balls that you build with, and they're still legal, and we still do sell them, but we keep them by the counter, and we make sure we tell parents these are not for children, because if you happen to swallow a magnet and then, like, you know, an hour later swallow another magnet, then they can cause serious damage to your intestines. So that's something that I definitely tell everybody that's even looking at a product like that, hey, you know, make sure you keep this out of reach of your small children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got to be careful with that. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Tim. We encourage everybody to go out to your store and find some presents for this Christmas season, really any time of the year. It always amazes me the kind of stuff that you guys have out there.
We always try to have something unique here.
What are your hours, and, you know, how many days of the week are you open?
Sure. Right now we're open 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday. But coming up after Thanksgiving, we extend our hours. So we're open every day of the week. We're open 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and then we'll be open on Sundays in the afternoon from 12:30 to 5. So that's starting on Black Friday. We start opening a little bit earlier and closing a little bit later.
Well, best of luck with the holiday shopping rush coming your way, Tim.
Hey, thank you guys very much for having me on.
He's Tim Shingleton, Playthings, Etc., Route 8 North in Muddy Creek Township. You'll see it. You can't miss it. It's the Spaceship Store. Again, Tim Shingleton, thanks for joining us. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back, and we'll chat as It's Your Turn continues on WISR 680 AM.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way. Getting there stops here. Just hop the bus. Easy and economical, just hop the bus. No car, no problem, the bus will get you there. 'Cause that's what we do.
Hop the bus,
leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Hearing aids are a complex issue, but at the heart of it, we really want just a few simple things. We want to be able to hear well, to get personalized care, and all at a reasonable cost. Well, a simple chat with Hearing Services by Kelly, and you'll find that she stands above the rest. She's not going to sell you the highest price hearing aid just to make a sale. In fact, you'll save thousands of dollars because there isn't any overhead. With Kelly, you get experience and one-on-one personalized care that you don't get anywhere else. Call the hearing aid lady today. Phone number 724-756-4327. That's 724-756-4327. Her customers who made the change are so happy they did, and you will be too. 724-756-4327.
Quite a large amount of toys there.
Yeah, I am. I had no idea of any of those toys he was rattling off. I must be so far removed from.
Isn't that funny?
The toy world.
Tyler Friel, Kayla Molzan with you, by the way. It's your turn, WISR 680 AM. We're filling in for Dave Mullarkey. I never had, no fault of anyone's, but I don't think those types of toys existed when I was around.
Well,
that's not that long ago.
I was just going to say, it's so cool that we have a place like Playthings, etc., and just a specialty toy store in Butler County, because a lot of places don't have that. And
no.
I mean, you could tell just from listening to Tim talk, he's a wealth of information. You know, if you're a parent or an aunt, uncle, grandparent that needs something cool this holiday season, I would definitely go up and talk to Tim, because he knows everything I think there is to know about toys.
Where my parents live, farm area, you know, and someone brought a drone over. And it was like a really high quality drone. And it's the first time I've really seen one up close. And you could see it. They would have, I believe, the camera was on the remote control. And this thing is going all around the property. And you get these bird's eye view. I mean, you can tell how these things are used for more than just playing around.
Oh,
like
yeah.
How important they are with when it comes to just any different type of thing, getting an aerial shot. And I'm more and more they are incorporated when it just comes to I see a lot of this with gas lines. I see a lot of it with PennDOT projects, different things like that, where they're trying to scope out the land and they want a really accurate, detailed look at it. And drones have been something that they've been using, not for fun, but for actual projects.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't make it down to the Veterans Day Parade on Saturday in Butler, but I was told from people that were down there that one of the bands, I don't know if it was Monita, I think it was, that actually one of the band directors had a drone, and they were flying it. They were going to follow the Monita band as it traveled down Main Street, and obviously to use that footage for, you know, whatever reason on their website or whatever in promotional videos. But how cool is that?
I know. It's wild. And there have been some really cool, well, one of the cooler shots that I remember, BC3, when they actually lined up their students to make a B, a C,
yes.
and a number 3.
Yes.
They did that all via drones.
Mm-hmm.
So there
the
are
Jeep
a lot
Festival.
Of, yeah, Jeep Festival's done it. So we've even seen it at a local level, and those are starting to be even used more for news coverage. You're starting to see some people use it for that. There's just so many different things you can do with them, and they are. I mean, some of them can be expensive. You heard Tim say, I mean, you're looking at sometimes $2,000 drones.
Yeah.
That's quite an investment.
Right. And there's, I mean, we didn't get into it with Tim, but if you're thinking about purchasing one for yourself or for your business, there are a lot of regulations. I mean, you have to, FAA regulations. I know that the Butler County Airport, now called the Pittsburgh Butler Regional Airport in Butler County, they hold a lot of seminars throughout the year for people interested in drones, or if you have a drone, you really gotta, you know what you're doing. You can't just shoot that thing up in the sky and Hope everything will be okay. There's some rules to follow.
Somewhat off topic. When did the airport change its name? Has that happened for a while?
That was a couple years ago,
okay, I wasn't even aware of that.
Yeah.
I should probably get up on things. No, so anyways, yeah, I mean, we talked to Lou Sabina. He was a professor of business at BC3, adjunct professor, and he was talking about his Black Friday shopping habits. So if you do want to support local businesses, because Saturday is Small Business Saturday, and if you're looking for something outside of the Barbies and the Hot Wheels to get a little more complex with toys, I mean, Playthings is a pretty cool. Have you ever been in there?
I honestly, and I'm sad to say, I've never been in there. I've driven past it
thousands
of times.
Yeah,
I've never been in there.
Well, I mean, in your defense, you don't have children,
right,
you're not a kid.
Right, but still, I mean, it's one of those stores that I feel like everybody should go. You could spend some time there just walking around seeing what they have.
Absolutely, and I honestly can't tell you how many times I've driven up there.
They are always playing outside.
They're always playing outside. So it's like a car. You can test drive your toys and see what happens. So a big thanks to Tim Shingleton for coming on to the program. We're going to be talking with Justin Stockdale. He's with America Recycles Day. This is today, actually, November 15th.
Yeah, it is.
We're going to be chatting with him in just a few moments. I have to ask you, do you recycle?
I do.
Okay.
I could probably do it better.
I think everybody could.
But I do try.
We're going to dive into that that conversation with Justin, because it does take a conscientious effort to go out of your way and recycle, because it's somewhat easy to do, but it's not
still
easy
extra work.
Yeah. Exactly.
Still extra work.
And there's, I think, a number of questions that people have when it comes in regards to recycling. And to be honest, I honestly don't know when recycling started. Do you?
We'll ask him.
Okay. He is the expert. So we've got a litany of questions for him. Also, later on in the program, we're going to be talking with Deborah Cassidy. Deborah is with PennDOT. As you had mentioned, one of the things that you'll talk to her about is these Votech students that painted plows.
Mm-hmm.
And I was driving past the PennDOT facility on, what is it, Newcastle Road?
Yep.
And I actually saw one of the plows. And I was like, wow. That's really neat.
Yeah, it's really cool. They invited all the county school districts to participate, and I believe the Butler County Votech was one of the few that did. But, yeah, I mean, they got these kids right in there, and they painted the underside of a plow, and some have messages like slow down or, you know, it's icy. but it was really cool what they did, and they're going to put them out. I mean, the plows are going to go out in operation in the respective school district. So if Monita kids did one, it'll be out in that area.
Oh, okay.
So you'll see them. I like to say that clearing of snow will be more colorful this year.
That's your thing? That's what you're going with? That's creative.
Makes us happier, because we're always so mad when you're in the snow.
Really? Well, do you not like cold weather?
No, it's not that I don't like. I mean, I don't. Well, I guess some people do love it.
Some people love the cold.
I like the seasons. I like that we experience different seasons throughout the year, but yeah, the snow is sometimes cumbersome.
Yeah, it can be. So we'll talk with Deborah Cassidy. She's with PennDOT. Mm-hmm. We'll also chat with Justin Stockdale. He's with America Recycles. So we've got plenty more coming up. You're listening to It's Your Turn. Tyler Friel, Kayla Moles, and sitting in for Dave Malarkey on WISR 680 AM.
Whether you're a backyard car fixer-upper or an auto repair shop, Milich Auto Wrecking is still the place to go for new and used auto and truck parts. They have been for over 40 years. And compared to factory prices, you'll save big bucks. Milich Auto Wrecking is neatly organized and will tell you immediately if they have the part or not. Open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5, it's Milich Auto Wrecking, Route 38, the Oneida Valley Road. Look for the big black and red sign. Stop by or call 287-1001. And yes, old Uncle Fred still goes to Milich.
Welcome back to the program, listeners. Tyler Friel, Kayla Molzan with you, WISR 680 AM. We're in for Dave Malarkey. And today is America Recycles Day. And we're going to learn a little bit more about that with the Western Regional Director of the Pennsylvania Resources Council. His name is Justin Stockdale. Justin, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me on, Kayla and Tyler.
Yeah, we're great. Well, thanks for being with us, because we actually have a lot of questions when it comes to recycling. And the where I wanted to start, Justin, was really how long recycling's been a part of America. When did recycling start?
From the very first day America existed. I mean, in a very real way, I mean, to be honest about it. You know, we as consumers, as humans for that matter, have recycled our stuff since, the dawn of man. Modern recycling, as we think about it today, is really an outcome of, I guess you could trace it back to the post-World War II era, or even during World War II, where you saw things like rag drives and metal drives and paper drives in support of the war effort. And it evolved to be what it is today over that time. What we are all most familiar with is recycling, as you put everything into one blue bin and put it out in front of your house. That's really only about 10 or 15 years old.
I think a lot of people think, when I recycle, am I really making a difference? And I know you have some, you provided us with some facts. The average American family produces 100 pounds of trash per week. That's insane to me. I mean, 100 pounds of trash every week. That surprised me.
Yeah, and it gets scarier than that, Kayla. So US EPA estimates that we throw away as a nation, just as citizens, right? This is not industries, this isn't steel mills, but just as consumers, 258 million tons a year. I mean, it's the waste we generate as humans, it only grows. I think in the 25 years, I jokingly say that I've lived in the dumpster, that number just keeps going up and up and up.
So since we are throwing away that much, I'm assuming you want people to recycle as much as they can, and you say it does make a difference?
Oh, absolutely. It makes a huge difference. And it's interesting, you know, if I climbed into that dumpster 25 years ago, I got involved in recycling, I would say first and foremost for the environmental value of recycling, right? That it's going to stop a clear cut of trees from happening, or it's going to stop a mine from being opened. As I've, you know, learned this industry better and better over these years, it really is, it's about those things. But more importantly, it's about jobs. It's about economic motivations. It's about value of resources. And so I really encourage your listeners that, you know, it may be a change in thinking, but to consider the economic impacts of recycling. And I'm going to throw some stats at you.
Mm-hmm.
66,000 direct jobs related to recycling just in the state of Pennsylvania. That comes from a report from the Recycling Market Center in Harrisburg that they just released about a month ago. Those jobs create $22.6 billion in economic impact in Pennsylvania. So recycling is not just an environmental thing to do. It's very much an economic question.
Wow, that is surprising. I mean, because I think the first thing that comes to mind, you think recycling, okay, like you said, we're saving the trees. It's an environmental impact. But wow, that's a lot of jobs.
It's a lot of jobs and a lot of money. And, you know, one of the things that I've talked about now for these 25 years is that, you know, people think, well, my one aluminum can doesn't make a difference, right? So, or I had that soda bottle in the car and I'm at the gas station, I'm just going to throw it in the trash. And it's in the moment, that one can, it probably doesn't really represent much of a difference economically or environmentally. But when we gather up everybody's cans, it starts to have really immense impacts. And so a state like Pennsylvania, we might throw away, several million dollars of aluminum cans every year because it's inconvenient because there was no bin right there in front of me, so I just tossed it in the trash.
Mm-hmm.
So and that's missed economic opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely. How long have you guys been having a day dedicated to America Recycles and really getting the word out there? When did you decide to start doing that?
So this is America Recycles Day comes from an organization called Keep America Beautiful, and they founded it in 1997, and it was really trying to say, okay, we've got Arbor Day for trees, we've got, you know, different days for different things, and they tried to, you know, use and create this America Recycles Day is one day a year to remind everybody of all of these important pieces of what recycling is.
Why do people not recycle? Why do you think that?
Oh, again, there's a whole host of reasons. There's a general rule we use in this industry, Tyler, that says, you know, there's 20% that are going to recycle no matter how hard you make it on them, no matter how difficult or complex it is, they'll find a way to recycle their stuff. There's another 20% at the other end of the spectrum that they won't recycle, period. You could, you know, I could come to your house and sort your trash for you to get you to recycle, and you still won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's 60% in the middle that are really the folks that are on the fence that, you know, may or may not, they may be influenced by convenience, they may be influenced by this economic, you know, question, they might be influenced by, you know, a bird species in their neighborhood that's threatened by deforestation, right, that they would be moved in some way. By and large, though, we look at it that, one, you know, convenience is a factor. The more complex we make it, the more challenging it is for people to recycle. But certainly I think there's also there's some resistance to recycling that I've heard over the years that, you know, well, if it's worth all this money, then where's my share? And it's a valid question, right? If we're saying the aluminum can is worth dollars, then why isn't that dollar returned to the guy that recycled his aluminum can?
Mm-hmm.
And the only real response to that and the true response to that is that, you know, it takes money to recover this stuff, right? So throwing the trash, it's a one-way street dead end to a landfill. You pay a trash bill every month to cover that cost. Recycling, we're not charging you to pick it up at your curb. We're not asking you to pay for that service. Yet it costs us money to sort all that stuff out and get it back to that destination market to be consumed. And so that value is consumed along that path. Mm-hmm. But it does pay for itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that only makes sense. It costs money to do that. You mentioned convenience. I think that's a huge factor. Do you have any tips for people? I know I'm sitting here thinking, even in my own house, I need to get two, you know, trash bins, one for recyclables, one for trash, because I will, you know, try to do the right thing. Okay, I'll put the empty soda bottles beside the trash and take it out every once in a while. But sometimes I don't feel like taking it out, and I don't want to look at the garbage anymore, and I just shove it all in the trash can. Do you have any other tips for people?
Yeah, keep it simple. You know, I think we as an industry we've overcomplicated it over the years. You know, boil it down to one thing that you're going to commit to recycling. You know, if there was one thing I could ask your listeners today, if America Recycles Day is meaningful and you want to make it meaningful in your house, pick one material. Pick the soda bottle, pick the aluminum can, pick the newspaper, and say to yourself, I'm going to commit to recycling this year. And once it's embedded, it just starts to become second nature. You know, your trash can out in front of your house, it takes involvement by you, right? You have to fill it, and then you have to haul it out to the curb.
Mm-hmm.
Recycling is no different, right? We're not asking you to do something special. Just think about those items discreetly and that use two bins instead of one. So I would really try to encourage people it's not rocket science. It's basic, you know, identification of materials and understanding that one's got value and one doesn't and making that decision.
And you talk about being second nature. And to be quite honest with you, Justin, I recycle because my parents recycled. That's just what I grew up with. And I never really looked at the benefits. And so we've listed a few of the benefits. And you talk about a 60% group of people who are on the fence one way or the other. What's your main argument to them that they should start recycling?
My number one argument these days, Tyler, it's again, it all goes back to that economic question. You know, one stat that we talk about frequently is that for, you know, every one job at a landfill, there are 10 jobs at recycling centers to handle that same exact ton of material. So, you know, we talk about, you know, unemployment and we need to create jobs in America. And this is, you know, in my world, this is no-brainer stuff, right? That these are durable positions. You know, it's not glamorous work. You're not going to, you know, become fabulously wealthy working at the recycling center. but they're real good blue-collar jobs that they pay for themselves. And I think that that's my number one encouragement to people is that, you know, you have a choice to make every time you put trash in the trash can, and that choice can impact somebody else's life in a very real way.
Have you seen recycling increase over the years?
Yeah, you know, if you look at the arc over time, you know, broadly we would say that recycling has grown. The U.S. EPA today says that Americans recycle about 34% of their trash, and that is on a constant growth pattern. It's only gone up since they've been tracking those numbers. But then, you know, we see occasionally a report came out last week that shows aluminum cans are at their lowest recycling rate ever recorded, and I want to say it's in the 50% range.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we see ups and downs. And, you know, again, when you get into the details of this thing, it's a market, a commodities market business. So as the price of aluminum goes up, the value of that scrap aluminum goes up with it.
Right.
And vice versa. So there's a, we have to, again, as we get more deep into the conversation about recycling, there is an important understanding. This is no different than, you know, the trading of orange juice futures on the Chicago Stock Exchange, right? These are commodities.
Mm-hmm. It seems kind of, you know, self-explanatory, simple stuff here. Like you said, we're not talking rocket science. But in terms of the products that people can recycle, I think everybody gets, okay, the plastic soda cans, soda bottles.
Yep.
But what else? I mean, I think some people are probably throwing stuff away that they just don't even think can be recycled.
Yeah, so this is, again, part of our problem is the industry is that we've made it complicated because what's recyclable in one town may very well not be recyclable in the next, the neighboring municipality. And so it really is dependent on your community and what your community program supports. But, you know, we can speak in generalizations, Kayla, that, you know, generally paper. If it's paper, if it's junk mail, if it's a magazine, if it's a newspaper, if it's office paper, it's recyclable by and large across every community in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Aluminum cans, steel cans. The plastics gets a little, you know, challenging because there are so many different kinds of plastic out there. You know, we at PRC educates people that really what we're after is one and two bottles. So if it's a bottle, it's recyclable. If it's a weird yogurt tub or some other kind of plastic, you know, I opened a package of a little electronic device this morning and it's got that strange impossible to open plastic shell around it.
Yep.
That stuff is generally not very recyclable. So we try to educate people and steer them to bottles, right? To keep it simple. You know, again, it doesn't have to be, you know, chasing numbers on the bottom and what shape is it and what color is it. We're trying to avoid those kind of complexities for people because,
mm-hmm.
frankly, I mean, we know, I know, right, myself personally, the more complicated it is, the less likely I'm going to do it.
That is funny because just yesterday I was eating some apples and peanut butter. I'm looking at the peanut butter jar and it said something like, this may be recyclable depending on where you live, so throw it away. But I mean, there was literally like an explanation,
yep,
on the Jif container, and I'm thinking, what the heck?
Yeah, no, and that's an interesting question, and it's actually gone all the way to the Federal Trade Commission where, you know, people saying that that container is recyclable, well, they now have to prove that it's recyclable by, I think it's 60% of the consumers in America if they want to put that label on the container. So, again, that's the complexity of it. Again, you get to bigger thoughts and, well, why don't we just put stuff in things that are recyclable?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Why do we have packages that aren't?
We're talking with Justin.
I think that's,
go ahead.
That's the future of recycling, I think, in America, is this shift away from, well, let's just deal with whatever mess we have, and let's be a little bit more thoughtful about what mess we're creating. So we're designing products to be more recyclable, to be easier for the consumer to understand how to recycle them. And you're seeing movement there across the country on things like household paint. Even mattresses in some states have,
mm-hmm,
programs designed to recover just mattresses. So it's a slow evolution, but, you know, it took us, the first Earth Day was in 1971. You know, it took us a long way to get to where we are today. It'll take us a long way to get to sort of that next level, but I think that is the future of it.
We're talking with Justin Stockdale. He's the Western Regional Director for the Pennsylvania Resources Council. This is kind of piggybacking off one of Kayla's questions. When it comes to, like, a Jif container or any type of container, I was always taught to rinse it out before I put it in the recycling cans. Is that the case?
Well, you certainly don't want to put a half a jar of you know, Peter Pan out in your recycling bin. And, you know, that's just, I think it's a little bit of common sense, right? Because that's going to go on a truck somewhere, and then it's going to go to a recycling center. And if there's a bunch of food in it, then it's not going to be very recyclable. But, you know, on the other hand, should you scrub that thing spotlessly clean? Absolutely not.
Okay, so there's right? a happy medium there.
That's right. The guidance we give people is use the product that's in the container. You know, you bought that jar of peanut butter, use the peanut butter before you recycle the jar.
All right, I can live with that. Demographically, Justin, who is recycling and who isn't? Is there a major difference between a younger demographic and an older demographic, or is it pretty much the same all across the board?
That's an interesting question, Tyler, and I think Pennsylvania presents a really interesting sort of setting for that question, because in Pennsylvania we've had, since 1988, a state law that effectively has mandated recycling service to, it's close to 75 or 80% of the population. And so we've, as we talked about earlier, we've embedded this into just routine. My elderly parents recycled diligently, and the only reason they did is they had been doing it so long, right, that it became this second nature habit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would expect that a state like Pennsylvania, while I don't have hard facts on this, that if you have that recycling program, we're probably one of the higher, you know, percentage rates of people using that system. So we talk about participation rates in a program, and you can expect Pennsylvania numbers are higher than most because it's been, you know, a standard practice for so long. But demographically, you know, I don't think we could pick out that there's one age group or one socioeconomic group that recycles more than others. I think, you know, I see diehard, again, that 20% overcommitted recycler. I see them of all stripes and sizes and shapes. So I wouldn't say there's any unique group that are more prone to recycle.
Do you think the next generation, so the quote-unquote millennials, would be more likely to recycle, though?
I think it's possible, but, you know, one of the odd facts in Pennsylvania, and again, as we go back to 1988, when these programs started in Pennsylvania, the state invested a lot of money in public education. So organizations like PRC and a lot of others like us, we were presenting in every classroom at every grade level across the entire state, educating young kids about recycling. And frankly, the state, you know, has terminated all of that funding, and there has not been aggressive public outreach like that for well over a decade. And so, you know, you would think that the change in that funding support of in-school education would have a direct negative impact on, you know, the younger generation recycling more. And again, I can't speak to is that happening or not, but
mm-hmm.
There has been a shift in how we approach, you know, public education and the importance of it as it relates to recycling.
Justin, you mentioned those hard-to-recycle collections. We've seen a lot pop up here in Butler County, whether they're, you know, the local municipality holding the electronics collection, getting your old computers, TVs. Obviously, we've had the DEA's Drug Take-Back Day in our area. I'm assuming that you support those kinds of things in local communities as well.
Oh, absolutely. PRC has been conducting a variety of recycling programs for, again, these very challenging materials that are very rarely part of a curbside or a household pickup program for, I think, over 15 years now. So there are some materials, as you mentioned, Kayla, you know, the old computer, the old television set, the pharmaceuticals, that really aren't appropriate to be picked up in a mixed bin of stuff on your curbside. And so they tend to get seared into events in some communities, and I think, you know, Butler has this available to you, a permanent drop-off site where a lot of that stuff can go. But, you know, that takes this to a whole nother level, and I think back into that environmental motivation, we talk about television sets and, you know, that we all bought that big 32-inch, nice, beautiful Sony Trinitron because we wanted to watch TV.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out we all bought big, giant blocks of lead because that's the majority of why they weigh 150 pounds. And there is a real environmental consequence to those kind of materials that, you know, you don't want over the hillside. You don't want, you know, tossing some landfill somewhere to pollute groundwater down the road. And so these kind of event-based collections become more and more important to address those really difficult materials.
Mm-hmm. I wonder what the future will look like too, Justin, with, I mean, just the amount of electronics that are in someone's house these days, the cell phones, you know, iPads, laptops, computers, it goes on and on. You know, what that will look like in the future, us getting rid of all this stuff as we continue to buy more stuff.
It's a great sort of a crystal ball moment there, Kayla, because that's exactly it. What is the future on that stuff? Because it, you know, I have two young kids. We've got more devices and more, you know, hand-me-down devices from my siblings and grandparents. There's, you know, a couple tons, it feels like, of electronics in my house today.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is where you're seeing that sort of policy shift at state levels and even to some degrees at national levels, where we're saying that, you know, the manufacturer who created that stuff bears some responsibility in the management of it long term. And so in Pennsylvania, we have this law, the Covered Device Recycling Act, which is sort of our first stab at it, to say that, you know, electronic devices like these, that the manufacturers need to support the recovery of this stuff and build programs around the state to make sure people have access to convenient and ideally free options to manage these things.
Mm-hmm. People hate to pay to, I know I have a dad that's like, I'm not paying to recycle that television. And it's like, well, Dad, you have to, you know, in some places anyway.
Yeah, no, and that's, again, it's an interesting conundrum for folks because, you know, you paid $700 for that Trinitron, right?
Right,
like, it was
right.
A big investment. And then, you know, the thing, it still works. We get this all the time at our events. You know, somebody will bring that old TV in and, oh, well, it still works and it's totally good. Here's the remote control and the manual for it. And, you know, again, nobody wants that old dinosaur TV. And so it's really hard to convince people to take responsibility, which is why, again, we have the state law that tries to, you know, that attempted to drive the manufacturers to pay that cost. Unfortunately, that law has not worked out so well, but we will see that shift.
We're talking with Justin Stockdale. He is the Western Regional Director for the Pennsylvania Resources Council. When we look at America as an entity, and again, just, I'm interested in geography, demographics, different things like that. Are there certain parts of the country that don't recycle and certain parts that do?
Oh, absolutely, Kyler. Again, a great question. You know, the number one driver for recycling in the U.S. or globally, frankly, is the cost of the alternative. And if the alternative is a landfill, that cost to send something to a landfill drives the recycling, you know, the popularity or effectiveness of a recycling program. So if you look to the coasts of the U.S. where, you know, whether it's New York City or it's San Francisco, the cost to throw away a ton of trash is upwards of $150 per ton, right? So it's very expensive to make trash go away. In a place like Pittsburgh, the average price is about $20 a ton or $28 a ton. And so we use those dollars as incentives, right? So if landfill costs me $150, well, that means recycling can cost up to $150, and it's a break-even proposition. And so you see folks like Portland, Oregon, San Francisco, Seattle, Washington, even New York City really at the lead and the forefront on these, you know, recycling programming because the alternative is so expensive.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Justin, do you have any uber interesting facts of what our old stuff could become to really drive the point home? I looked up some and it said, you know, your plastic shampoo bottle could become a park bench. Your cereal box could become a game board. I like that stuff. I think it's visual for people.
Yeah, you know, one of my favorites related to that, Kayla, is, you know, that old aluminum can could be right back in your hand as an aluminum can and a new drink in 60 days. So from your recycling bin to back in your hand as a fresh drink in only 60 days has always amazed me. You know, the number of trees we can save, the electricity savings are pretty astounding. Glass bottles, if you can get a glass bottle back into a glass manufacturing to be turned back into a bottle, it's 90% less energy consumed.
Wow.
Compared to digging up sand and silica to make new glass bottles. You know, a lot of your plastics, every time I'm in a meeting at some building in downtown Pittsburgh, odds are that the carpet we're standing on is made out of old soda bottles. Nobody ever thinks about it. Nobody ever considers that, you know, wow, my soda bottle turned into acres of carpeting, but that's where the majority of old soda bottles go in America right
mm-hmm.
now.
Hmm.
Park benches, you see more and more communities using, you know, sort of closing that loop of saying that, you know, we're going to recycle our old milk jugs. Well, they come right back to you as a new park bench. Paper is another fascinating one. And I think the turnaround time on paper, your newspaper, from, you know, you open up the Sunday paper on a Sunday morning, it's in the recycling bin Monday.
Mm-hmm.
It can be right back on your doorstep in a matter of weeks.
What
in newspaper again?
What about the plastic bags? I for me, that just really is so wasteful to me. You know, I go to the store, come back, unload, and within 5 minutes, they're in the garbage. Can you recycle those?
You can, and most retailers in Pennsylvania and, frankly, across the country have taken that recognition and recognized that, you know, they don't want to be just generating garbage for folks, right? And
right.
So most stores have a bin out in front that they'll collect those plastic bags for recycling, and they're frequently turned into plastic lumber. So if you ever, you know, a deck spot or you go into Home Depot or Lowe's today, and you can buy plastic lumber decking, and that's all coming from old plastic bags.
Oh, wow, interesting.
So, you know, we have certainly encouraged folks to, you know, years ago I heard a guy say that, you know, recycling is a dirty word. If you have to recycle it, you have a problem. And what he was talking about was that, you know, we need to think about what we're consuming before we have to recycle it. I tell a story about my brother who used to, you know, buy 8-ounce little miniature bottles of water. And he said, oh, don't worry, Justin, I recycle them all. I said, Andy, that's great. You recycle it all, but you really need 8-ounce bottles of water?
Right.
And he's since been converted under my peer pressure to he has a refillable water bottle he diligently uses.
Mm-hmm. There's so many different facets of our lives that I think we really could, if you care enough, and you should care enough, you know, as a human on this planet, that you could really cut back on the stuff that you're using.
Yeah, and I'd really point out, Kayla, that it's not just about, you know, taking care of the planet. It's about taking care of your neighbor and their job. I mean, I really do believe that, you know, these choices we make as individuals about where our can goes or our newspaper goes, they can have deep and resounding impacts on our communities that are far beyond an environmental bound.
And you talk about the economic impact when it comes to jobs and different things like that. Is there an economic – does recycling make the products cheaper? You talk about the carpet. You know, does the fact that they get to use recycled products make those products cheaper?
Well, in principle, yes. And whether that manufacturer passes that savings on to you or not is probably an open question, Tyler. But, you know, it's the reason recycling works in the first place is as a raw material, as a feedstock, it's competitive with the true raw material that it's competing against. And we talk about aluminum cans, and, you know, the long story of where the aluminum can comes from is likely a mine somewhere along the equator that's being shipped halfway around the world as an ore, be processed and invested in to finally end up as the aluminum can. Now, would a company like Alcoa rather source that raw material locally? Absolutely. And, you know, what is that source? Well, it's coming out of our recycling bin. So there is certainly a manufacturing advantage to recycled content. And, you'd be really hard-pressed to buy an aluminum can today that's not got a pretty high percentage of recycled cans in it. Same goes for newspapers. Same goes for, frankly, carpet. For industrial settings. So there is a cost advantage. Again, I would point out that, you know, everybody's making money everywhere, right? So I would imagine you're not going to see a big price break on your fleece jacket. But
in theory, it would be.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, because it's a commodities market. You're competing with the alternative commodity.
He's Justin. Go ahead.
No, that's just going to close that thought, that's all.
Okay, well, I think that's a good little bow on it. So really, your main argument to the listeners when it comes to recycling, the environmental stuff is there, but you have an economic argument that you really think this has impact on the economy.
Oh, certainly, Tyler. Again, I very quickly point out, it's not just, you know, what I think. It's been documented in numerous reports. This recent one commissioned by the state of Pennsylvania, directly about Pennsylvania, US EPA put some pretty staggering numbers behind this too. You know, I've seen numbers reported out over the years that say that recycling, it dwarfs the automotive industry in America by number of jobs and economic impact. I mean,
wow.
It's not small business.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, great information, Justin. Thanks so much for taking time out of your day. I can imagine you're busy on a day like today, and thank you for taking your time and sharing your advice with listeners.
No, thank you, Kayla and Tyre. And again, happy recycling to everybody out there, and not just on America Recycles Day, but every day.
He's Justin Stockdale, Western Regional Director, Pennsylvania Resources Council. We're talking America Recycles Day. Justin, again, we appreciate your time.
Thanks again.
We'll be back right after this. You're listening to It's Your Turn on WISR 680 AM.
Hey, folks, have you heard about Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center? Yeah, they're located just off Newcastle Road, Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande. Going Postal Butler. They package your items for shipping. And that takes care of a situation that sometimes can be a real bother. You know, you got to get the wrapping paper, the string, the tape, whatever you need. They'll do it for you. And you can ship any way you want to, FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service. They will package your items for shipping at Going Postal Butler. Other services they offer, copying, scanning, faxing, mailbox rentals, custom boxes. They have an official notary, also greeting cards, even a lottery agent. Going Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane. That's just off Newcastle Road, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. It's in the Shockey Mini Storage area. For more information, give them a call, 724-841-0044. Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Hi, this is Dave Malarkey. I'd like to talk to you for just a moment here about the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here at Butler. What a great job they do to help those who are less fortunate in many ways. They operate the St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank, of course. They have their St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store in the Greater Butler Mart and their Client Aid Program. And the Client Aid Program helps needy families or individuals, maybe with help on a heating bill or a rent payment at the end of the month, Client Aid. And that's funded through the operation of the thrift store. So you can help by donating items that you no longer need or want to the thrift store. It's very easy to do. Drop-off bins are right inside the door. You can use the container outside. They're located in the Greater Butler Mart, just a few doors up from the Friedman store. So think about it. Next time you're cleaning the closet or the upstairs, instead of throwing that stuff away, why not donate it to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler? We stand tallest when we stoop to help others. DBS Telecommunications, a telephone equipment dealer and a data network installer serving Butler in the Pittsburgh area. They sell, install, and repair telephones for your office. They primarily install commercial telephone and voicemail systems. DBS has been serving the Butler area for the past 32 years. They specialize in phone systems, in custom-designed networks, including fiber optics. They specialize in high-quality hybrid digital systems, 5-year warranties. They specialize in high-definition surveillance camera systems, multi-door entry access systems, overhead commercial paging. They also provide cabling for voice, data, and cable television wiring in both industrial and commercial applications. We use DBS Telecommunications here at the Butler Radio Network. We've utilized their services for many years. For more info, call them today, 724-285-9088. They're also on the web at dbs-tel.com.
Welcome back to It's Your Turn here on WISR 680 AM. It's Kayla Molzan, Tyler Friel, in for Dave Malarkey this week. We are happy to be moving along on the show this afternoon. And unfortunately, we're going to talk to Deborah Cassidy. That's not the unfortunate part. I just know when I talk to her what it means. She's with PennDOT District 10, where Butler County falls into. Deborah, I know that when I talk to you, winter is coming if it's not already here.
Well, yes. Thank you for having me on. Absolutely. It's unfortunate that we have to go into the winter season so soon. You know, it just always seems like it just kind of just creeps up on us. But, you know, we got a little lull there, but It's coming, and it's coming with a vengeance. So, you know, we want to remind everyone that the best thing that you can do to, be safe during the winter, to drive safe during the winter, to make sure that, you know, everyone is protected and gets home safely all the time is to be prepared. And we've been preparing at PennDOT for some time now for winter. And there are some things that motorists can do. We've got a lot of really great resources on our website, PennDOT.gov, that you can use. In tips on preparing your car for winter, packing an emergency kit, you know, such things like, you know, make sure your cell phone is charged up. Do you have water in your car, a blanket, you know, your ice scraper, you know, things like that. It's a really nice little list that you can have together. Go have your car checked, make sure all the fluids are good, your lights and wipers and everything are in good working order, your heater. You want to be ready for that first storm, because the more prepared you are, you know, the better it will be for you and the safer that you'll be. you know, so we've got some new resources this year. Of course, we always have 511.pa.com, mm-hmm. and we've made it a one-stop shop this year. This is the first year to start that. You can go on there. There's a weather-based map there, a winter weather map that we'll have going on from November to April. That way, if you're planning a trip across the state of Pennsylvania or even just in District 10, that way you know what the road conditions are, what the weather conditions are. If there are incidents, those are flagged. Traffic speeds are given. You know, if you have a smartphone, log on to 511PA and sign up for audible alerts. That is really a great thing. I use that all the time. When you're traveling, you'll get an alert, a verbal alert on your phone saying that, you know, something is happening. You may have to take an alternate route, mm-hmm. or, you know, they're transferring traffic off of an interstate or a turnpike. It's always good to know ahead of time so that you know that you have options. So those are some really nice new features that we've got as part of the 511 mobile app. So, you know, check that out. Go there and become familiar with it. You know, we at PennDOT here spend about $19 million a year on winter. Butler County spends about $5 million. You know, they've got 42 trucks out there and 83 operators that are ready, and we will be soon going on shifts so that we can deal with this. We typically go out ahead of time if a storm is predicted that isn't a lot of wet precipitation. We'll go out and we'll put down brine ahead mm-hmm. of time. It's salt and water that we'll put down on the roadway, and the water evaporates and the salt stays on the road. That gives us just a little buffer of time between when the storm hits and when our trucks are out there. You know, and just a little reminder too about the kind of work we do. Occasionally especially in heavy snows, you'll see two snow plows plowing the same lane, you know, one in front of the other. Please don't get in between those plows because, you know, they're trying to get that lane, especially like interstate lanes, cleared as soon as possible. So, you know, be mindful that the plows are out there. They're very large vehicles, and there is a wing plow on the side too. So be careful when you're passing them and give them the opportunities, you know, to get that job done and make that road ahead of you safe.
It's my understanding you mentioned the 42 trucks and the 83 operators mm-hmm. that you guys hire. I know you hire a few more for this time of year, don't you?
Yes. Yes, we're hiring temporary operators. So if that's something that you think you'd want to do, you know, just contact our Butler County Maintenance Office or any of our maintenance officers, or go online to PennDOT.gov. There's a really good and very clear employment application process to follow. So, yes, we're always looking for that because, you know, winter is a big job and it takes a lot of people to do that job well.
I understand, too, that you mentioned putting that salt brine down, getting ready. You guys have already inspected all the trucks, got everything out, dusted everything off. You're all ready to go?
You know, like I said, we spend practically the whole month of October in our inspection, inspecting our equipment. In fact, this year is kind of special for us because in addition to calibrating and inspecting our equipment on our winter inspection day, which we just held, we also had the opportunity to showcase our Paint the Plow program. This is the first year for District 10 to do that. And we had 9 plows in our 5 counties. And we're really happy about that because the school students did an excellent job, you know, painting those plows and bringing forth a different safety message. They're very visible. They were the highlight of our equipment inspection days. So, you know, thanks to all the schools for that. And right now on Facebook, PennDOT District 10 has a fan favorite contest. So you can go on and vote for your favorite plow. So it's based on the number of likes. So please go to the PennDOT Facebook page and look that up and you know, check out those plows. So that was a different thing for us, and we're looking forward to expanding that program next year.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that, because it's, like you said, the first year you've done it. I know students at Butler Votech got pretty fancy with their plow, and people will see that, because I know you're going to put that plow into service. Why did you decide to do that? What prompted this whole thing?
It's been a program that we've talked about for many years. Actually, District 9, one of our neighboring districts, has done it for 3 years. So it's just a matter, you know, if this was the opportunity for us to do that, you know, they piloted it and it worked out really well for them. And I think they're up to 36 plows this year, which is really amazing. And, you know, just it's just such an awesome program. And it, in addition to being, you know, just a great neighborhood way to get others involved and get the students involved and to showcase the safety message in a different manner, it's just such a good thing. I mean, it was just such a feel-good thing for all of us. We were so pleased to see the plows come in and to see the artwork that the students came up with. So it was just our, you know, our opportunity for, and we actually statewide, I think most districts did it. There's a couple that will probably be doing that next year, but we'd like to have that program be a statewide program so that we all do that because it's just such a good opportunity. And those plows, as you say, will be plowing throughout that in that school district area during the winter season. So the people in that area will get to see that too. It's just another reminder, a different way of saying, you know, please remember that this is winter. Give yourself extra time. Remember that ice and snow on the roadways. You know, really make it so that you have to drive in a different way. You have to think about things differently. You have to be prepared. Give yourself extra time. You know, watch out for black ice. You know, it's just another way of reminding motorists of the of what they need to be cautious of it during winter.
Isn't it true, too? We talk about this every year, and some people laugh it off, but I think it's true. We kind of have to retrain ourselves to drive in, you know, the snow and ice because it's been several months.
Absolutely.
And it seems kind of silly because if you have somebody that's like, I've been driving, you know, for 50 winters, but you haven't the last several months, you got to get reacclimated.
Well, you know, it's I don't know if we just want to forget about winter, not remember what black ice is like and how cold it is and why and, you know, blinding snow and, and so on. I come from the frigid north, you know, I'm a native of Venango County, so it was, you know, second nature to be on 90 and not be able to see where you were going.
Right, right.
But, you know, you I think you block it out somewhat, but yes, you have to get your mind around it. And that's why we spend so much time preparing. That's why I spend so much time and effort really reminding people that it's here whether we want it to be or not. So the more prepared you are and the more you wrap your mind around, okay, you know, I got to remember that those bridges and overpasses, there might be black ice on there. It might not be wet. So I'm going to have to be careful when I go, when I drive there to remember that. And if I, if it looks like, you know, it's a sheen, you know, I'm going to have to slow down. I'm going to have to give myself extra time. I'm going to have to leave 10 or 15 minutes or half an hour of extra time to get to my morning commute, to get to work. And it might take me longer to get home at night. You know, a little bit of preparation and a little bit of just changing your thinking will make the drive so much safer for you and everyone else. And that's the message we really want to put out this year, that, you know, just take some time to think about it. Take some time to prepare about it. Go, if you haven't got your winter tires on or your tires checked, go and do that, because it's amazing how many people start that first storm with tires that really aren't ready for that season. You know, it's those small things that you can do to prepare yourself. And the more prepared you are, the more ready you are to be able to deal with those, let's get back acclimated into winter.
Absolutely. I mean, we expect, we as drivers expect PennDOT to be ready, and you guys are. You, like you said, you take the whole month of October, but we need to take responsibility and put that emergency travel kit in our own car. You, I'm sure you see it. I see it. I'm out in a lot of accident scenes, and people just aren't prepared. They think, well, it's not going to happen to me. You know, I don't need that blanket. I'll just call somebody. It's, you never know what's going to happen. What if your phone dies? You know, there's so many circumstances that are beyond your control.
Well, you know, and basically like in summer and stuff, if something happens, you have a little bit of wiggle room. You got a little bit of a safety net. In winter, you know, given the low temperatures and if there's heavy snow and if there's ice or freezing rain, that takes away your safety net. You really, you know, the environment provides a whole new and a challenge that you have to deal with. So that really makes driving so much more challenging, I guess, is what I would say.
We're talking winter driving tips with PennDOT's Deborah Cassaday. Lots more to get you prepared for winter. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with Deborah here on WISR 680 AM. It's your turn.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler. to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 37, the pick 3 is 195, the pick 4 is 0878, pick 5 99097, wild ball for each of those is 8, treasure hunt 5, 10, 12, 18, and 20, estimated jackpot is $30,000 for tomorrow's treasure hunt.
Does your pharmacy tell you your wait time for a prescription will take a half an hour or longer, or maybe won't even be ready until the next day? Don't think this is your only option. At Institute Hill Pharmacy, we have made it a priority to take care of our customers' needs first because your time is precious. Most wait times are under 10 minutes. So don't you think it's time to make a switch to Institute Hill Pharmacy, located at 937 East Jefferson Street, or find us on Facebook. Institute Hill Pharmacy, an old-fashioned pharmacy just the way you remember.
Welcome back, listeners, to It's Your Turn here on WISR 680 AM. Kayla Molzan, Tyler Friel in this week for Dave Malarkey. I am heading this segment with Deborah Cassaday from PennDOT's District 10. Happy to have her on the show today, talking all things winter driving, driving tips, and how to get yourself prepared for the impending winter season. We know it's coming, just don't know exactly when our first big snowfall will be of the season. Speaking of the plows, I want to talk about sharing the road with a plow, because yes. This is an issue every year. People just want to get all up in there. We as drivers need to give these snow plows some room. I mean, these are big, big pieces of equipment. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, and thank you so much for giving us such a great intro into that, because it is so important. These plow drivers, this is a huge piece of equipment. There's a plow on the front, there's a wing plow on the side, and oftentimes that wing plow is extended. That is a very large vehicle. And the other thing is, it is a slow-moving vehicle, and there's oftentimes salt coming out of the back of it, out of the spreader. So you got to give it, you got to stay back and give the snow plow lots of room, because that salt needs to go on the road, not bounced off of your car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's following too closely is very difficult, you know, for the snow plow driver. And what they'll do, if you're in two lane and they're in front of you, first of all, they know what the road in front of you looks like and you do not. So they'll make that safe and passable for you. And oftentimes, if there's a line of traffic, what they'll do is they'll try to get to a place where they can pull over, as long as it's safe for you to pass them.
Sure.
But I mean, they'll make it as easy for you as possible, but you have to give them the opportunity to do their job. It's so vital. And as I said before, oftentimes on four lanes or interstates, we'll be plowing in a plow train, we call it, which means there'll be two plows,
mm-hmm.
one in front of the other in the same lane. And we've seen people who get in between those. That is such a dangerous situation, because snow is flying and everything else is happening. A lot of times they don't even see you. So you really need to stay back, give them the opportunity to get the job done, and then you can go on a safe and passable road.
Right.
It's so much safer for you. It's so much safer for us. I mean, you don't want to be in a situation where you don't get to your destination, you don't get home to your loved ones. We want everybody to get home mm-hmm. safely every day.
Right. And obviously, I mean, it can be frustrating. Sometimes you're trying to get somewhere and there's a big plow in front of you, but really they're making it safer for you. I always want to be behind the plow and not in front of it.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been inside the plow, and I don't know if you have, Kayla, but many of our reporters have been inside the plow. I think it's an opportunity, if you've not taken it, that you should, because seriously, once you're sitting up in that seat, you see what's in front, you're thinking, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, you know, you're in blinding snowstorms and you can't see, you're just seeing your hand in front of your face, basically, and you've got this, it's a very challenging job. Our people do an excellent job of it. They take it very seriously. It is something that they take to heart, and they're very well trained.
they go out ahead of time and do dry runs. They know what their route looks like. You know, they're ready. They're as ready as they can possibly be to meet the challenges that face them. But, you know, Mother Nature has a way of throwing things at everybody that you don't expect. So expect the unexpected. Be prepared. Give our people plenty of room to do their job. You know that their job, their prime of job is to make it so that you can get to your destination safely.
Absolutely.
So, you know, just remember that, be prepared, and slow down and just give yourself extra time. It just is the nature of winter. You just got to do that.
And we're talking with Deborah Cassidy from PennDOT District 10. Just have a few more minutes with her, and I want to ask you, you mentioned Mother Nature. We never know what she's going to throw at us. In those events of the big storms where you have the men and women working overtime, and you mentioned what a great job that they do. Do you guys have a method on, you know, if several inches of snow is coming down per hour, do you kind of wait for it all to fall? I know I always get questions. I didn't see any, you know, I didn't see them clearing the roads yet. Do you have that method, or is it really a case-by-case basis per storm?
What we do, and especially the first storm, we're even more vigilant, but this is really true. The process is true for every storm. You know, we really look at the advance weather, what's coming down, what's the forecast. We have WebExes where we get together statewide and we talk about, okay, this is predicted here. We're looking at the snow map. And now we're going to share that with everyone on 511 PA this year. You're going to be able to see some of what we see. But,
okay,
you know, we're looking at it ahead of time. What's it look like 10 hours out? What's 24 hours out? You know, if the first, especially the first storm, and especially any major storms, if something's coming, you know, you see a storm that's going to hit Pennsylvania and it's going to hit the whole state, we're all talking about it together because we also may have to share resources with other districts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if the southeast is getting hit really hard and we here in the northwest aren't getting hit as hard, our people are going out to help them. They may need equipment from us or operators. So we're always getting prepared. We know ahead of time as much as we can know about it. So we want to know about it. Okay, so is snow going to fall? Is it going to be ice? Is it going to start out with rain? Because I talked about brine.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go out, and people ask this question all the time. They'll say, you're putting water down on the road. We see this big truck with a tank on it, and it's putting water down. Well, it's salt water, basically, and as soon as that water evaporates, the salt stays on there because it's what we want to do is we want to keep that ice and snow from forming a bond on the road, because once that bond is formed, it's really difficult to get that off there. If you've ever, you know that when you try to plow your own sidewalk,
right,
to get the snow and ice off your sidewalk. So what we do ahead of time, you put that salt down there, and it keeps that bond from forming, so it gives us a little buffer. So if we are getting a huge heavy snow in it, or a huge heavy ice, or whatever's happening, or even just a normal, at least we've got some time to get out there and start, you know, plowing and spreading. And, you know, we not only use salt, we also use anti-skid. And a lot of times we use a mix of those two things together because it gives us even more punch, you know.
So there is a method to your madness.
You know, it's a science and an art, our people will say. And the science is temperature and precipitation and how does salt react to that? And when is it best to put that salt brine down?
Mm-hmm.
And how far in advance should we do that? Yeah, we have a very scientific way of looking at all that. But it's also an art because, you know, the men and women in those trucks, they know what is the best way. When do I plow? You know, the salt, and, you know, here I am on a curve, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a different treatment and there's a different process for every storm. There's a different treatment and a process for every roadway. You know, our interstates, obviously, they get first preference. If there's a huge storm, we need to keep those interstates going.
Absolutely.
Because that is commerce and that is a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
So, you know, we want to remind people, if you live on a four-digit SR and there's 10 cars a day or something, you know, and there's a major storm, it's going to take us a little bit of time to get to that roadway.
Yeah, got to hit the big ones up first.
Yeah, we'll do everything, but depending on what's going on with the storm, it may take us a little bit of time to get back. And then, you know, there's bus routes. Students have to get to school and get home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we look at everything. It is very scientific, and, you know, we've been doing this for a really long time. Our people are excellent at it, and, you know, they do a good job. And also, you know, something we didn't talk about, we do have a vehicle locator on 511. You can actually look at the trucks and see where they are and when they were last there, you know, because we have snow lane miles. We have snow routes. It's based on those snow lane miles. So each truck has a route, you know, and it takes them some time to get around to their entire route.
Yeah, you guys are the experts. I would really suggest if everybody hasn't looked at 511PA.com yet, and you have apps too.
Absolutely.
It's a really great resource. It really is.
Sign up for that app on your cell phone, and then when you're in the car, get audio alerts. I'm telling you, I've been on the turnpike when they said the turnpike's closed, you have to get off here.
Right.
And really, you know, that's a great audible alert. You want to, or someplace where there's a crash ahead. You want to know, we want you to know as far in advance of what's going on so you can make a decision based on that information.
Mm-hmm.
If you need to get off a road and go a different way, you want to know that. You know, every year we get better and better at that, but you really have to help us. You have to, engage with these apps and these resources and, you know, make them part of your daily commute so that you know what's going on. Now, I won't say that every single thing is there all the time, but, you know, we're getting better and better at it.
Yeah, like you said, you need to use these resources. The more education you have, the better you are. Go ahead.
Yeah, we also have a partnership with Waze, W-A-Z-E. It is another app. It's actually a user-driven app, but
yes,
we've got a partnership with them because what I was going to say is, you know, something may happen, and it may take us a little time to know about that because, you know, you don't know a crash occurs immediately oftentimes, you know.
That's interesting that PennDOT has a partnership with Waze. I know that's a very popular app.
Yes, it is. And so if you see, you know, you subscribe to Waze and you see something, you can be part of communicating that information, which is vital to everybody else who's driving along with you.
Yeah, it's really cool. If you've never used it, it's user driven. So if you're, you know, driving and you see an accident, it's slowing stuff down, you can, you know, put on there that you see it. You really need to have a passenger in the car with you.
Absolutely.
For that
do
one.
Do that.
Right. But I like that the 511PA gives you audible alerts. That's really nifty if you're by yourself.
Yeah. We want to remind people, please do not be texting and driving, especially in the winter. You do not have that luxury.
Mm-mm.
There's just no way you can do that. You don't have enough time. And by the time you look up, it could be too late.
Right. We don't want you texting and driving ever, but especially in the winter.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're just dealing with too much stuff already.
Yeah, it is. It is against the law, by the way.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Pay attention to driving because really in the winter driving needs all of your attention.
Mm-hmm.
Hands on the wheel, eyes on the road. You really can't be eating or playing with the radio. You don't really have that luxury of doing any of that in the winter.
Don't. Real quick, we got to talk about beet juice because remember how big of a story that was in Butler County? We know that you guys always treat the roads with salt, obviously, but sometimes if it gets really cold, you brought out the beet juice. Will you be doing that again this year?
Well, it was a pilot, and I believe it's still a pilot in the state. I'm not certain about that because that's one of those things that you know, was just done in a certain area during a certain storm period. We look at technology every year, and we're constantly looking to be better at it. You know, we want to do it better. We want to do it more economically. You know, we're good stewards of the taxpayers' dollar. We want to make sure that what we're doing really is making a difference and making roads safer. So we're constantly looking at things.
Hopefully, I know that was used particularly when it was super cold, like negative 10, negative 15. Hopefully we don't get down there this year. You don't even need to go there.
Oh, yeah, I don't want to be there. I'm not a winter fan, but, you know, unfortunately, as we said in the beginning, winter does come, and we have to be prepared for it, and we want to be safe, and we want everybody else to be safe.
Yeah. Well, lots of good tips, Deborah. Thanks so much for being with us. Not sure when the first big snow event will occur, but I know you guys are ready, and we hope all the drivers are out there ready, too.
And thank you so much for helping us to get the message out.
Absolutely. Thanks, Deborah. Thanks so much for coming on.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. A great conversation there with PennDOT's Deborah Cassaday from District 10, where Butler County falls into. PennDOT is ready for winter, they say, and hopefully all you drivers out there are ready as well. Again, we talked about a lot of information. We have some up on our website, butlerradio.com, and also you can head to 511pa.com. Can't tell you enough how many resources are available for drivers on that site. Okay, that'll do us and wrap us up here on It's Your Turn for today, Wednesday, November 15th. Thanks for joining myself as well as Tyler Friel. Happy to be filling in this week for Dave Malarkey. We'll be back with more great programming on tomorrow's show. Have a great afternoon.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and